Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the actress Lois Smith. The stage and screen veteran hasn't stopped working since making her Broadway debut in 1952, followed soon thereafter by her film debut in East of Eden. She worked with Elia Kazan. She originated a role in Tennessee Williams' Orpheus Descending. She was nominated for a Tony Award in Steppenwolf Theater's adaptation of The Grapes of Wrath in 1990 and was nominated again for Barry Child in 1996, but surprisingly has never won. On screen, she's appeared in TV shows like True Blood and Ray Donovan, and in films like Lady Bird and Marjorie Prime. Right now, she's wrapping up her latest Broadway gig in The Inheritance, playing an important featured role in playwright Matthew Lopez's two-part look at contemporary gay life lived in the long shadow of the AIDS epidemic. Smith is in the studio with me to talk about her favorite roles, her biggest influences, and the luxury of a three-show week. Hi, Lois. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
So you've been in The Inheritance since late September when it started previews, and now it's wrapping up its run on March 15th. What's the experience been like for you?
A very special one. I first met this piece probably 3 years ago or so when they were doing workshops of it here, and I spent some days in the room while it was being developed, and it was so fascinating. I loved the piece. The part is very interesting, though. It's 2 3-act plays, and I come in act three of part two.
Yes.
So,
but
so there's a lot of it. But
when you get there, you have a lot to do.
Yes,
right?
I get there, I have a lot to do.
Yeah.
But so I was very, very pleased to be part of this because I had been, I adored being in the room while it was when it was being made, and watching Stephen Daldry, who has the extremely and creative and enormously concentrated presence and a way of working, which is so much fun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Tell us about it. Tell us what that was one of my questions for later on, but tell us about it.
He'll just come up with, he is always on in terms of the material and always living it and thinking it and finding it. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And that was my beginning with it.
Right.
Well, the very beginning was when I was first sent it and told that this man was making a play based on my favorite novel for as long as I can remember.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
So now what is he doing with my favorite novel? Well, something quite unusual, as it turned out.
Yeah.
and that also has been very pleasing. Do you know the novel, How It's End?
I had never read it until right before I saw the show, in preparation for seeing the show.
It's lovely to have it inside you, though it's not necessary.
No, it isn't, but it is actually... It does something really interesting with the connection to the novel.
Yes.
How did you respond to that and what it
Exactly that way, yes. Yeah. The connections are fascinating. It took a while to sort them out. And one doesn't entirely ever do that, or is it the point? But
And what did you respond to? How finished was the play when you first...
It's hard for me to tell.
Became acquainted to it.
It really is hard for me to tell. I know it was not finished. I know there were many changes made when they first did it in London and some more here. It's hard for me to know.
Yeah. And so what do you recall responding to in the role and sort of your character's story?
Oh, she has such a life and experience to speak about, and it's an unusual situation. Well, the writing is unusual anyway, but what she's talking about happened, 20 years or more ago, and yet it's so immediate. So it's a finding all the truths about this moment of talking about this situation, her story, his a lot. It was just a lot of fun.
Were you living in New York during the AIDS crisis?
I was, yes.
Yeah? And how did this play and this character sort of chime with your memories of that time?
I had no memories of the kind that this play is dealing with directly, or this character certainly.
Right.
But, you know, like so many people, the horror and the friends dropping and the shock, continuing shock. And I think he's done an amazing thing to write this play.
The playwright, Matthew Lopez.
Indeed, yes. Something very special.
Yeah. Mm. And you are the lone female in a cast of men, largely
right.
in their sort of 30-something. What's that dynamic like, do you find?
This is the loveliest company. It's absolutely wonderful. I have the best dressing room. It's the only one on the stage floor.
Oh.
I'm the only girl.
Yeah, and it's all to yourself, right?
I have my own bathroom. the most convenient. It doesn't seem fair, but it's very nice. The worst of it is I have very little... I work with two wonderful actors, but the rest of the time I have very little interaction
right.
with the rest of the company. And they are so busy and work so hard, and there isn't anything like a green room backstage, and so I miss having as much to do with these beautiful people
right.
as I would like to have.
Yeah, because your scene is mostly with those two actors
that you mentioned. Yes,
right,
yes.
Yeah, and that is, in fact, exclusively, right?
That's
really?
Right.
Yeah,
right. Just two people out of this wonderful cast.
Yeah. And so over the 6 months that you've, or I guess it will be 6 months by the time you finish this, you've been in this run, how, you were saying just before we turned the mics on that you feel like it's gotten better. How so? How has the show changed over the months that you've been doing it?
It's deepened, and I suppose I was thinking particularly about me. I certainly got better.
Mm.
I think I had just barely gotten to having a performance when we moved into the theater.
Mm.
It was a rehearsal of struggle for me. It was
why?
I was working on the mock-up set in the rehearsal room was not at all the floor that I work on, and so I was working on it was some sort of a mountain climbing hazard.
Oh,
well, it was
no.
not relaxing.
Yeah,
you know how our set is, and I'm working on a basically level.
Yeah.
But they didn't build that aspect of it, you know, the floor changes.
Right.
And so there were two versions of it, and neither version was anything like what I worked
with. I see.
So
right.
So I would be on the stage, and then I would have an enormous step to another level, which had nothing to do with, and it was
with reality,
hard.
Right?
No, it was very hard.
Yeah.
It was hard. It was, and it's a hard part, I suppose,
I bet.
So, and there are times when it's not as though I haven't ever before felt, oh my goodness, I'll never get this. But this time I really did feel, oh my goodness, I'll never get this.
Do you have a sense of what it is about the part that was, the role in particular, that was hard for you to get your head around?
I kept thinking, I can do this role, what's the matter? I think it was that there was so much detail thrown at me. And that's fine.
Production detail or
no,
in the script?
Directorial
detail.
Detail.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And making sense of it all and putting it all together
and
in time was very challenging.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting. I was always interested.
Yeah.
That's nice. You know, I have been in rehearsals where you think, oh, let me out of here. But, but this was of great interest. And then... after we got into the theater and I could actually play it, I got better.
Mm.
And that, I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a great joy because that's still happening.
Yeah.
And I love going. I only get to do it 3 times a week.
Yeah, I was going to say, you work 3 days a week.
I think, now what's going to happen to me? This may be the end of me. How... Suppose somebody asks me to do 8 shows a week. What am I going to say?
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's hard to imagine at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I'm a very old person. So it's another reason I have the best floor on the stage, the best room on the stage floor. Right. And I'm the only girl. I'm no older than anybody.
Yeah. Was there a line or a particular character trait in that you found in the monologue and in your development of the character that sort of unlocked her for you?
Well, very early, Margaret tells Leo when they just arrived there at the house which in Howard's End would be Howard's End.
Right, this, exactly, yeah.
Very important character in the piece. And there's a tree, a famous, very old tree. And it, very, very early in the scene, Margaret describes this tree to the young man she's talking to who's ill. Mm. Doesn't seem at all clear whether he's going to get well, etc.
Right.
In those lines, she talks about the nature of this tree. It's been here for 400 years. There are stories about it that go all the way back, and the histories tell stories about the tree and goes back to the colonial days, and it proves that people have come to this house. It's legend has it that if you eat its bark, you'll cure your toothache or you'll get better. And that happens very early in the scene, and it seems to me that it's a kind of touchstone of what's, it's very important to her, this place, right. Its healing quality. She has a new candidate right now.
Yeah, we should say for people who maybe haven't seen it that she's running, what would you call it, a hospice or?
She was present in the 80s.
Yes, of course, right. Yeah.
But no, she's not. No, this house, she doesn't live there either.
Right.
This belongs to one of the characters it's an important house and it has meaning throughout both part one and part two of the play.
Yeah.
But for this character, its meaning comes from the time when it was basically a hospice.
Yeah, right.
During the 80s, 90s. And she is... So in a certain way, that is a touchstone, I think, to the person in the house.
Mm. Two of the two big characters in the show.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. You've been on stage regularly over the course of your career. You've been around here in New York for working in theater for a long time.
Yes, I came to New York when I began in 1952
yeah.
was my first job in New York, and my first job ever as an actress.
Yeah.
And I've lived in New York, or near, ever since.
And how has the theater in New York City changed over the years, do you find?
Oh, when I began, there were many, many Broadway shows and plays on Broadway every year. I mean, many, many.
Right.
And now there are a few. And then a few more musicals, but that's it. It was a very different scene.
Yeah.
Off-Broadway really didn't even exist.
It kind
of developed in my young days in New York, where there began to be this second kind of smaller productions, and sometimes revivals. One of the first really notable ones, but I think is considered like the start of off Broadway, was a revival of it's one of Tennessee Williams' plays. Which one is it? Summer and Smoke with Geraldine Page.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
And then companies developed, and now we have quite a number of them, which are established theaters who have seasons.
Right.
Of, you know, maybe five plays a season. And that's become, first, it also then became a national new idea when the resident theater movement sometimes later developed. And I was also part of that. I was in the beginning in Philadelphia of the Theater of the Living Arts mid-60s.
Right.
And I remember when that was going on, having the sense that they were all over the country developing these things and that everybody had the same story. Each city would start out with, they would try to develop a board of directors, they'd get an artistic director, but no one quite knew how. And there were constantly stories about the difficulties and sometimes quite, vivid.
Yeah, right.
Where the board didn't know what to do and the audience didn't know what to do. And it was very exciting, I must say. I was with the Theater of the Living Arts for its first three seasons, which then kind of fell apart, but it continued, but under very different auspices before it fell apart. But many of them didn't fall apart and really grew and still and exist still.
Right.
Yeah.
And when people come to Broadway, and then maybe they're working on Broadway for the first time and working in the New York theater community for the first time, they often say that what they really appreciate is the feeling of community that there is in Broadway. Did that exist back when you first started out, and has that changed at all over the years?
You know, for me, it was my very first job. I felt enormously lucky about it. Melvin Douglas was my father, and I played one of three teenage girls in a domestic comedy.
Yeah. What was that called?
Time Out for Ginger.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I think at that point I probably didn't realize what you're talking about, which I certainly do now, the sense of community. I was lucky to enter the community so quickly.
Mm.
And within the first few years I was here, I not only was working on the stage, but there was lots of television in New York, television drama.
Yeah.
In a way that's hard to even realize now. It wasn't series. There were beginning to be a few series, but there were, every week, there were probably maybe eight, some hour long, some half hour long dramas,
right.
A play.
Yeah, these were like standalone stories, right, exactly.
That's right,
yeah.
And based on plays as a rule.
Yeah,
adapted
right.
It was so exciting, and the people, even the crews, they were so exciting because they were doing something they hadn't done before.
Mm.
The equipment was very different. Cameras were huge.
Yeah,
they had enormous long cables attached to them, so a camera couldn't cross another camera.
Mm.
So they had to be choreographed the same way the actors did dashing across the soundstage.
Yeah.
And it was very exciting. But I started to say, I started to work in television. My first television job was a Kraft Theater. Was one of them, The Apple Tree by John Galsworthy,
sure.
Based on his, Fielder Cook was the director and George Roy Hill was the assistant.
Mm.
And they would talk about staying up late at night and think, what shall we adapt this week? And
right.
And that sense was really fun.
Yeah. Did TV pay better then the way
yes.
it does now? Even then it did?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, the pay scales were very different from what they are now, but yes,
yeah.
Even then, it was better than that.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
And then within the same first couple of years, I had my first movie.
Yes,
which
was notable. Yes, indeed.
So I was so lucky to start the way I did. I mean, I'm so fortunate,
yeah.
And it meant that I could work all the time. But really steadily, and make my living as an actor all these years, which is sometimes hard to do.
Right.
But I was able right away to work in both television and film and stage.
Yeah.
Which,
did you ever think about, you know, going off to Hollywood and being a Hollywood
actor?
I
never had to, and I didn't want to.
Oh, okay.
So I was lucky. I went there to work, of course, often.
Sure.
But no, I never was tempted to move there.
And why is that? What do you
get
from New York?
And I like to live in New York.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
feel a big difference. I did then. Mm. I think I probably do still. I mean, you know, but I and the world are different after all these many years. But it's a different... I don't mean to romanticize the New York theater, but theater is sort of, it's where I began, and it's where the actors who work basically in theater, if that's where you begin, it's a very different kind of work. Mm. I mean, of course, the seeds are the same, but putting on a play is different from making a film or putting on a television show. The speed of work, the intention is different. Oh, that sounds very odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how so? Would you?
Well, certainly in television, the intention is to make money, mm-hmm. and in the theater, it's not to lose money, but it's different, and yeah. it's a different nature of work. I used to think when I was much younger, oh, well, on television, we're skimming the cream off of what we know how to do, and you know, you're not actually, rehearsal process is something that feeds and deepens and grows, you know, and something I treasure and like a lot.
I'll have more with Lois Smith right after the break. And now here's more with actress Lois Smith.
You mentioned coming to New York in the early 50s. How did you first find acting, and when did you decide that you were going to pursue it professionally?
When I was a very small child, the youngest of six children, my father...
And this was in Kansas, yes?
This was in Topeka, Kansas, yeah. To start with, and later in Seattle. Mm. He wanted to put plays on in the church, and he had taken acting and directing courses in night school, which... I knew nothing about it at the time, and I'll never know much about it. He worked for the telephone company. Mm. He had no experience, he almost never went to the movies. It was the damnedest thing. And, but I was very little, and I went with him, and that's clearly how it started. Yeah. I would be at rehearsal. If I would learn all the lines just by being there. If there was anything for me to do, I would do it. But and that's clearly how it started. And then I always did what there was to do. I happened, when we lived in Seattle, where I went to high school, go to a high school that happened to have a drama department, not just an English department, so I had far more. And as it developed, I think what happened is I realized I could do this, and that any level I got to, I would rise to the top. So I began to have not only a pleasure in it, but a confidence in it. Mm. And I was given was dropped in my lap, a little scholarship to the University of Washington, which had a notable drama department.
Yes.
When I was in high school, finishing high school. It was a state university, and I lived there, and it was extremely inexpensive. Mm. But still, I was just saying, here you are. You can go to the university. So I did, and went to the drama department there. And that's where it began to be more, where it began to be training, where it began to be all the things I had just wanted to do were now, oh, yes, people actually do this, you know, and work at it. And then that was a great pleasure.
Yeah.
And I went from there, from a couple of years at that where there was an amazing kind of experience in that there are two theaters on campus, played six nights a week, every play played 6 weeks, six nights a week to a paying audience. It was unheard of, I've never heard of any, and it was the kind of experience that put me in very good stead to begin.
Yeah. And then was it in New York that you studied with Lee Strasberg?
Yes, at the Actors Studio.
Yeah, and what was that like? What were the sort of biggest lessons for you during that time in terms of shaping your craft?
Well, the kind of training of the tactical sense, I had studied the Russians a bit while I was had a teacher at the University of Washington who had been in New York early on when the Russians came over and sort of changed the face of theater,
you
know, for us and for many. So I had had some training in college classes and so it wasn't new to me. And at the Actors Studio, I think I learned very much about how to, when you're not on, that is when you're not performing that day and you're responding, I learned how to see, how to listen to what the, I learned what the technique was, which is often actually not followed, it seems to me, but to see what you're shown, to see what the person has to say about it, at the actor performing, and then to learn from that it for oneself. And it, I found it hugely informative, I guess, learning to both take responsibility for being up there, to being on, and what the task is. And I learned it partly by watching others and learning to incorporate that. I think I still pay attention to that in some already without thinking about it. You know?
And you worked with Elia Kazan as well, another great big director.
Yes, in my first movie.
Yeah, in your first film. Did he impart, was there any lesson that you particularly learned working with him in terms of?
He was such an actor's director that that he had a very energetic and vivid way of directing, of asking for very specific thing. You know, when I watch that scene in East of Eden, I'm just amazed at how beautifully directed it is. Mm-hmm. It's staged, and it's just what a lucky beginning.
Who do you consider sort of the biggest influences on your career in terms of shaping who you are and how you work?
Oh gosh, I guess my especially the one teacher, Dan Harrington at the University of Washington, and the fact that I worked so much, that is actually performed in plays and not just like a night or two, but did a little run of each play.
At the University of Washington.
And I think I still feel that way, that the main thing each time is to do it. And each one, you learn that there is a way they go, a pattern, but each one is entirely separate. Yeah. And that's endlessly exciting and sometimes frightening.
What, in your more recent work, what do you consider your sort of most memorable projects? What has really sort of stood out for you?
I did The Trip to Bountiful, a beautiful play of Horton Foote's, about, I don't know, maybe, what is it, 20 years ago?
I was going to say 15. I think maybe it was 2005.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it's 15 years ago. And
a beautiful production.
That was a very, really, really satisfying, and I loved everything about it, and I loved the way it was directed. I loved the way it grew. I loved the pleasure of...
Who directed that? I forgot.
Harris Yulin.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
And he came up with a way... The first time Harris and I knew each other and had worked together, both as actors, and he had directed me before, but when we first spoke about the play, and he mentioned his idea of how it never stopped once the trip began. And then it was designed so that, you know, originally it was a three-act play with many different sets. And now the different scenes were still there, but each one moved into without, and couple of weeks in rehearsal, I think Horton said, you know, we could do it without an intermission. It had been a three-act play in the 50s. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's funny.
And we did. He did some cutting, and it was just thrilling.
Yeah.
And it was maybe There are some of the, probably the most satisfying, that one. There are some others. The Grapes of Wrath, which was the first mm-hmm. thing I did with the Steppenwolf Company.
Yeah, right.
We did it at Steppenwolf and then at La Jolla and then in London, where we were part of an international festival, and then on Broadway.
And then here, yeah.
And that was also the most remarkable thing. You don't usually get three different productions, each one re-rehearsed and building on the one before. So that's a very special joy. And again, a wonderful piece of work, a wonderful company. I was at that point just falling in love with the Steppenwolf Company. That was right. my first working with them. Buried Child, which I also mm-hmm. did with them, and Gary Sinise directed it.
Yeah.
Frank Galati directed The Grapes
of Wrath
and adapted
yeah,
right. it.
Yeah.
And then Gary did a remarkable job with Buried Child. I thought that production with James Gammon. And those were very special. And then recently, I really loved doing Marjorie Prime, Jordan Harrison's play at Playwrights Horizons, and then made a film of it.
And then, what was it like to then make a film of
that?
Oh, that
was pretty wild.
Yeah.
It took a while to incorporate what was happening because I love the play and the film, which I love also, but it was so different that there were...
Yeah, they're two very different things, right? Yeah.
My character probably changed less than anything else. And so I didn't feel like I was suddenly asked to do something really very different.
Right.
And the director, Michael Amoreta, is an old friend, and we've worked together very happily.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you, actually, the new Wes Anderson film you have a role in.
Oh, I have a little part. I do, yes.
As an observer, you feel like he must be this like crazy micromanaging, like super precise director. Is he that way to work with?
That's part of it. Mm. And also, it is as relaxed, as inclusive, as comfortable, and much fun as you can imagine. Yeah. It's really like nothing else.
Well, great. What felt like to you the role that you were born to play?
Ooh. I suppose early on when this probably happened in college. I don't think I had read The Seagull before that, but The Seagull became a favorite play, and I suppose Nina, how many actresses, young actresses, must feel that way? And I worked on it in class. I've worked on it in, and then later, I was once auditioned to play Masha in the production at the Guthrie, directed by Lucian Pintilia, the remarkable Romanian director. This was quite a while ago. And I had worked at some kind of a workshop that had been done up at the O'Neill with a couple of English teachers. And one of the things I worked on was Arkadina, So I asked Lucian if I could audition for Arkadina. He said, no, I love your Masha, that's it. But he agreed, and then he gave me the part. So I got to play Arkadina.
Wow.
I've never played Nina.
Yeah.
And I've never played Masha, which I also love. But I did get to play Arkadina. David Hyde Pierce was my son.
Wow.
Constantine, yes. So.
Was there a role that got away? Is there a part that you thought, that you think that's the part that got away?
I think there's probably just lots and lots, and especially Shakespeare, because I've had very little Shakespeare. Yeah. So I never played Juliet, except in class, you know.
The Inheritance is closing on March 15th. Do you have, what's on your plate after that?
Oh,
do you know yet?
I don't know yet,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I've been very busy. I had a very busy year even before this.
It seems like, as you mentioned, theater is a place that you always come back to. How do you think of, how have you thought of your career in terms of how theater and film and TV all fit together?
Given the world I live in and the place I live in, I've just been so lucky that I've been able to do them all with, and you know, at first, early on, I would get little movie parts, and that was fine. But then I've had some lovely ones as well.
Right.
And so that's nice. And in television, I haven't ever... Well, True Blood was a series, although I came to a terrible end in the first
season.
You
sure did, yeah.
So I didn't play it. I haven't ever wanted to do one for a long, long time.
Right.
So I've done some, you know, part guest stars that sometimes they go on for a little while. Sometimes it's a single one.
Right.
And sometimes they're wonderful. I was given a scene in The Americans. It must be like...
Right.
I don't know, maybe, what, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, they're not always that good. The writing was just, it was just a wonderful scene.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad I got to do that. I had a conflict reshooting a movie, and they waited for me, so I got to do it. And and I loved doing it and thought we had really done it right,
yeah.
Both the writer and me and everybody involved.
Yeah.
So that was a pleasure. Sometimes it can be very, very good indeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like even though you don't know exactly what's next for you, it sounds like you'll be back on stage sometime soon.
Oh, who knows? Maybe playing a Broadway show 3 nights a week is the epitome. And how am I ever going to match that for satisfaction?
That was Lois Smith, now appearing in The Inheritance, which finishes its Broadway run at the Ethel Barry Moore Theater on March 15th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe and find past episodes there, on Spotify, on the Broadway Podcast Network, and on all the other pod places. And if you've got feedback, find me on Twitter at @GCoxVariety. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.